Thanks for the invitation.
Always a spot for you.
Always appreciate it.
Always a spot for you. Jennifer on?
Yep.
Hey, Jennifer, how are you today?
Good. How are you, Ed?
Great. I had left off Iowa. That was the reason.
You what?
Think about it. I had left off Iowa. You'll figure it out if you think about it.
Okay.
We had a discrepancy in two numbers yesterday.
Oh. Oh, okay. Well,
I apologize. Sarah here?
Yep.
Bill Barnett.
Michelle. Hey, this is Michelle here. Bill might be a little late today.
That's all right. Ken's out of town. Kathy Sulik or Scott?
We're both here.
Okay.
And it's Michael. I just came on. Hi.
Hey, Michael. Nice picture you sent.
Oh, yeah.
That was really very beautiful.
It's a beautiful place. New Hampshire.
Jeff Wozniak.
Yes, I am here.
Jeff. Peter Hammond or Deepak?
Yeah, I'm here, Peter, and Mike's here as well.
Hey, Michael.
Hey.
Hello, Peter. Tom Donaldson. Dan Savage.
Hi, it's Tom at NoFast.
Hey, Tom.
Hey, Ed.
Is Hannah on? I don't know how many of you saw Hannah had an article come out this week on sudden infant death. Dan, Dale, or Bill?
Dan's here.
Dale and Bill are here. Hello.
All right, so the people who we knew could not make it were Kathy Mitchell, Susan Tapert. Tatiana's going to be a little late, but Jackie's here listening in. Tina and Ken are both on planes to D.C., and Elizabeth Sal's on her way to Munich. So as you can see from the agenda, Elizabeth, who was supposed to give the WebEx presentation today, we canceled that because I, for one, wanted to hear from Elizabeth. The last WebEx she did, I forget who did it, but one of her postdocs did it. But I think I would have rather, this time, rather than have something like that done, I think we would like to hear from Elizabeth. So we just canceled the WebEx for this month and a few other things to deal with. So, our next call will be in January. And at that time, the WebEx, I believe, is going to be by Peter and Tatiana.
Yeah.
Okie doke, so we're right about that. There are two symposia that have been submitted or are coming up in the near future, and I wanted to thank Michael Charnas for putting together a symposium that was submitted to the RSA on face, brain, and behavior, connecting the dots in CIFSD. I think that if this is anything like the one that he did last year, excellent and create a lot of interest and talk, and I do appreciate him putting this together. I might even suggest that if someone would like to be very ambitious, that they symposium and try to make it into a paper of what's going on in CFAS and in these data sets and data reduction in these large data sets. So just if anyone's interested in doing that, let me know. But I think it'd be a really great idea to do that. But, I mean, his last symposium, I just thought was outstanding. So, Michael, you do wonderful stuff, and I appreciate it. PFAS on the map.
Thank you.
Welcome. I'm not sure if everyone has received it, but the brochure is now out for the meeting that's held in Vancouver every other year on the International FASD meeting, and CFAS is on for Friday, March 6th, starting at 8:40 in the morning. There's going to be presentations by myself, Johann Eberhardt, Mike Charnas, Scott Parnell, Peter Hammond, Tatiana Farood, and then we'll have a break, and then Ken Warren's on, and Kathy Sulik, and Christina Yuvan from Los Angeles. So just so that you're all aware of that, is there anyone else going to that Vancouver meeting?
I am, and I'm presenting. Sarah.
I too, Ed. I'm going, and I'm presenting on Saturday morning, I believe.
All right. So, are you both in the same session, or are they?
No, I don't think so. I'm on one epigenetics and biomarkers that Joanne Weinberg organized.
Okay.
Sarah? I'm not sure when mine is. I can't find the brochure. I know I got it, but I can't find it.
Okay.
Ed, Bill, and I hope to be there, but you know how government travel goes. And while I've got your attention, I see a number of us on the WebEx link. Are we not going to use it at all?
We just put it up in case people had data that they wanted to show.
We might, it sounds like.
We might. So I asked the same question.
Okay.
It's good that we're thinking alike. And I don't know if it's good for you. It's good for me. But, So, all right, so Sarah will be there, and Dan. Write a note. Okay. That's an excellent meeting, so I'm not sure if they're still accepting abstracts or not, but if anyone's interested in going?
If anyone's interested in going, that's a really good meeting.
You want to send around the brochure?
Yeah, I'll send around the brochure. I got one. I think that the link they sent out yesterday doesn't really work.
I just downloaded it.
I just found it by searching.
Yeah, me too.
FASD Vancouver.
Yeah, so the program, but if you should have also gotten an email that if you are presenting there, is not to register yet, that you will get another link about registering so that your registration fees are waived. All right. Okay. Bill Barnett get on yet? No.
No, it's just me here.
All right. So we'll come back to the publications policy and the concept proposal update. I don't think anyone submitted anything yet. And also have to come back to the data sharing policy update. Although we do have requests for data sharing, so it's an issue that we are going to have to start making sure that the central repository is up to date and that the central repository is functioning and providing information that people may request. So that's my next question to Michelle, I guess. About
yeah,
how
sure.
the repository, the cross query tool, how are they all working? I did some stuff with it last week and I didn't have any problems, so I was somewhat pleased. But I don't use it all that much, so I wanted
okay.
to hear from you and from people who use it more than I do.
Okay, this is what I know regarding the cross query. People have come back to me and said that when they do some tests and get some data, it takes forever to generate the spreadsheet with the data for them to download. Something is supposed to take like a few minutes, is going like to half an hour. So one of the things that we are doing here is move pretty much the cross query and center repository to a different machine to see if we can, because I believe there's like some network issue. There's some technical stuff going on. So we're hoping that this will solve that problem. Regarding the people having access to get their data, I think from what I remember seeing from the proposal for the data sharing, I believe we're going to be giving them files with the information they're looking for, like the dysmorphology and things like that. So what we like to do is have a separate space when people go and get their data, because it's going to be pretty much be open to, you know, go to the process, get a data request, get approval, get a user agreement, and so forth, and then we give them access to the data. But it might be a good idea to keep that separate from the normal central repository that we have right now, which is the one that allows people like to upload and things like that, because they're not going to be uploaded, they just want to get their data.
Right.
Which there is a mention in the proposal, if I'm not correct, is have a separate website going to be called like public.cfasd.uedu, which then only authorized people we have access. Say if they just want a dysmorphology, they only be able to get dysmorphology and so forth. Does it make sense?
Yeah.
Okay, so that's pretty much all I know. I did speak with Bill about the data sharing policy, and it is my understanding that the data request form is available on the website, and now what they're working on is the data user agreement. If there's somebody on the deck that might have more information about that, but that's pretty much all I know.
Okay, because I know we have had one official request and they are waiting for IRB approval for them to get access to this data. And,
mm-hmm.
And you know, I don't think we want to wait a tremendous amount of time afterwards. And then I have spoken to another person who wants to get access to the data as well, and I am putting them in touch with Bill to go through the formal process.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, if we're going to say that we have it, and I think, you know, after this many years, we need to have it up in place and running. You know, we have to have a reasonably quick turnaround where people aren't waiting, you know, a year to get access to data they requested.
Oh, no, absolutely. I agree with you. So
high priority, okay. Other people on the call who have tried to use the cross query, have you had any problems with it other than the time?
Yeah, I actually, this is Sarah. I don't, just don't use it. We can't, we just do it ourselves. That's what we've been doing lately.
Anyone else?
I know Leah had some issues, but I think I've shared those previously.
Okay.
I didn't realize you were going to talk about this. I apologize. I could have made sure I got more details from her, but we can circle back on that.
Yeah, we have a lot invested in this central repository and trying
totally
to make
agree. This
work. And so if it's not functional and all we're doing is taking and basically could be downloading Excel data sheets and then putting them together ourselves, then, you know, we have an issue. So.
Right.
I really need to press that we need to get this up and running and working. And if it requires the purchase of some commercial software to help do it, we need to do it. All right. So let me know what you need and to get it working, and we'll see what we can do to help out. All right.
Sounds good. All right.
Okay. Our face-to-face meeting. Almost no one responded to the second doodle poll, so we are going to stick just with our original dates. That means a few people will not be able to make it, but that was the best that we could do. So we're trying for March 19th and 20th, and we will try to renegotiate a breakfast, but so far that hasn't worked out, and it will be at the Rockville Hilton, and that's where we will meet as well. And
so it'll just be the 2 days, Ed, the Thursday and the Friday?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, let Jill get back on. She has the thing. I mean, people will get back in. We'll be able to come in on Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
We'll have to determine when the SAB will meet, but we will get you out of there on Friday, 3 o'clock. So everybody should be able to get home that night.
Unfortunately, we have to stay till Sunday.
You have to stay.
To get the cheap flight on Saturday.
You know, I'm going to look into that because I think maybe we go through Expedia. We don't need to do that, but I'll have Jill look at that. All right.
Okay.
she may want to know what your preferred airlines is, but we'll try to do that. We have the mid-year. We are basically halfway through the current funding year of CFAS, and so progress reports are going to be due. RSA abstracts are also going to be due. And then our progress reports to NIH are due April 1st. And this year, according to Jill, they're requiring us to do the electronic filing of those progress reports. Jill, do you have any comments on that?
You should all see when you go into ERA Commons, you should see a link to the RPPR. Has anyone else noticed that?
That's a no.
Ooh, okay. How would we notice that? I hate to ask that.
It's in ERA Commons, and you probably have received notices from Commons telling you that it's going to be RPPR this year. And there's just a few other questions. So I thought for the mid-year progress reports, we could try making them more along the lines of that format so that you kind of start getting your information into that format in preparation for the ones that are due to NIH on April 1st. Does that sound okay to everyone?
I think it's a great idea. I don't think I've gotten any notices, so now I'm going to go log in.
You might not get notices. I might just be overly ambitious about looking at NIH policy things. So.
Well, I'm glad it's you then. Okay.
It's not extremely different. It's just structured a little bit differently, so I thought it might help to prepare. And then, Ed, I missed it. Did you say whether or not we would have those due when in January, or does the 12th work? Or
we didn't come up with a real date.
Okay.
But I was waiting.
To start working on them, yeah.
Thing.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, the RSA abstracts are due, and then, you know, I don't want to overburden people, but we do have to get these mid-progress reports so that we can send them out to NIAAA, and it also gets us ready for the progress reports that are due April 1st.
Right, but just to clarify, no one else needs to send their mid-year ones to NIAAA. Those just come to us. In case there's any confusion.
Right.
And your business office doesn't sign off on them or anything. So.
Right. They're the ones that we put together for the meeting so
mm-hmm.
that people have an update prior to the meeting. So the meeting is going to be in March, middle of March. Why don't we try for the middle of January for those being due?
Okay.
Does that work for everybody? Any problems? All right. The big thing that's happened here in the admin core over the last month are the solicitations for the pilot projects. We received 35 of them this year. They have come in from all over the world. We have applications from Australia, South Africa, Canada to do studies in Brazil, in the Mauritius Islands. We have both human, animal, and we also have some cell line studies. And I asked Jill to send out a list of the 35 applications and who they're from. They include both fairly well-known people in the field, well-known people in other fields, and new people that I really don't know who they are or exactly what they do. But our next step is to...
Has that gone out yet?
Jill?
Just sent it out shortly before the
meeting. A little while ago.
Okay.
The one-page outline, I think only one person did it in one page. So he automatically gets points in my book. for following instructions. Jill says, however, it's a possibility that the form let them run over somewhat. We also have their bio sketches. With the one-page application, the bio sketch, it's almost a 300-page document. So that was not my intent when we solicited these things. My intent was to basically have a one-page description and then a short bio sketch on everybody, for the PI anyway. So what I would like to ask people is all you're going to get is a title, but I need the names of potential reviewers, and we will reimburse the reviewers for their time to do this, and we try to pick like five or six people that we can ask to rank order these things in their areas of specialty, and then after that, then we'll decide which ones get the five page, and then those will be reviewed by the SAB with outside reviewers as necessary. And the reason for sending these to outside reviewers is a lot of us will know all these people, or some of them, and I think it's just best to have an anonymous external reviewer help us with the initial ones. Some of the people who have submitted them are already involved in CFAS, and I just don't want anyone to be placed in an awkward situation of having to review someone that they're already working with. Within CFAS. And they really run the gamut of all types of things. I think we've gotten away from counting subjects to more mechanistic things, more basic science time projects this time. So you'll see the list, you'll see the titles, and if you can send me the names of reviewers, that would be great. And Jill's going to be on vacation for the next week, so if they come directly to me, that would probably help. All right? Any questions on the developmental projects? And I think, Jill, what do we have, money for two? We're going to try to go to three or four?
Yeah.
Okay. But that will be done in consultation with NIAAA and the SAB. All right. And
Ed, what's the total amount of money that's available for the developmental projects next year?
It's a secret.
It's a secret.
It's a secret. I think budgeted-wise, it's for the ones that we don't have already committed to $150K plus indirect, mm-hmm. and plus some funds that I might have out of the admin core on a carryover request, so we're going to try to do it. I won't bias you with my thing, but so I just need reviewers who are going to look at these and try to rank order them and give us some idea of where to start. You know, it's going to be a big document to look at. So,
So Ed, define outside reviewer.
Someone who's has a broad overview of FAS in a particular area, because these grants are from everything from stroke susceptibility to treating interventions in pregnant women in Mauritius Islands. So you're going to need people who have some broader expertise and have a little bit of time, and like I said, we do reimburse them for their effort. So if you look at them, I'm sitting here over the last day and a half trying to figure out, well, who could, you know, review a fair share of these and know what was going on. It's been a little difficult trying to pick four or five people that I thought could go through these things and make some decisions. And some of the people we've used in the past are now submitting, and that makes it difficult because we can't rely on them again.
And Ed, when we did this I don't know, about the third year of the previous five-year phase. Did we set up a matrix to try to help those who were trying to score these applications?
Yeah, they get scored on whether or not they fit in with the aims of CFAS.
Mm-hmm.
Because there are going to be projects here that are good projects, but they're really,
well,
it's a stretch to see how they fit into the consortium,
yeah,
except as a, you know, a mini
RO1, right,
that's looking at...
Yeah, it seemed that I thought we had something before, and I recall the fit factor was pretty heavily weighted, but I just don't recall the details. And I
there is a sheet.
So we have that sheet. And one of the questions when the application is how do you see yourself fitting into the consortium, and what consortium resources are you going to be or using or be rely upon? So. You know, because we can't have it that someone says, well, I'm going to come in and take all of your subjects and do genetics on them when we don't have really have, they won't have access to all the subjects. And so it's a one page, I thought it would be one page to run over that, but it's just a matter of trying to pick them out. And there are some very good people here that have submitted, so.
I just wanted to explain the one-page thing a little bit. Everyone did just submit one page. However, once they were received in PDF format, I sent them to the links with the Google form that we'd established that kind of broke things out a little bit more, so it gave people the opportunity to directly speak to those two questions about CFAS resources and interrelating with the projects. So I would guess that the majority of people just cut their science into the thing. And so that's probably a repeat, but they do, some of them are 2 to 3 pages because of offering the Google format and the what PDF they sent me.
So we are going to try to get those reviewed sometime in early January, so then we can send them out to the 5-page and with more detailed budgets. And I'd say that of the ones I've looked over so far, almost everyone's requesting $100,000 a year. So that's where we are with that. So any help you can provide me with those would be appreciated. And what we are looking for are projects that, in my opinion, we have not had always the best luck with these developmental projects, where some of them have, you know, just been funded. We are lucky to have gotten a publication out of them, and then they faded away into the background. They didn't serve their what we had hoped was that they would spin off into RO1s or come back in as UO1s into their CFAS renewal. And so I think we need to be very careful if we want to continue this mechanism in trying to get some bang for the buck this time. And even if we have to offer people less money and fund more of them, but I really think it's a matter of picking quality people who need some funding to get started. I mean, we've made some very, very good choices in some of these developmental projects that have opened up brand new areas for us, and I think are providing some of the most exciting data coming out of CFAS. But at the same time, we need a higher percentage rate of developmental projects that move forward into successful RO1s and UO1s. And so keep that in mind.
Ed, related to that, I wonder if it would be fair to put some weight on recent publication record.
We do have their bio sketches, and they will be sent with these one-pagers. And, you know, I think where we've gotten I agree. I will give you my biases. You know, I think we can all look around and look at the previous developmental projects and ones that have gone on to be extremely valuable to CFAS. and other developmental projects that we had great hope for and lots of enthusiasm behind, and just seemed to die a very quiet death. And we need to avoid those quiet deaths.
Do we, are the developmental projects, though, if we use publication record, does that bias against more junior people, or is that not the group that we're, are we not targeting them?
I think
no, I think we've gotten bang from buck from some junior people that have been extremely useful and valuable to the whole consortium.
That's what I'm saying. I think that I'm just wondering if we could perhaps publication record is a good part, but also needs to consider something else. Otherwise, we'll just give it to the most senior people.
Publication record can be looked at in the context of how long people have been out there. I think it's about the rising stars.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And I think that's what we need to do. And, you know, in the past, again, my bias is that sometimes when we've given money to people who have established research careers, this is just kind of considered an additional small amount and may not get the priority that it's needed in order to take it and make it into something really useful and valuable. So I think we need to be very careful, and we also need to be careful that we, in fact, as a consortium, can and are willing to provide the resources to make these projects worthwhile, that there has to be a commitment from people who have UO1s to, if a project needs their samples or whatever, is that they are going to be available and made, and so we don't have long delays in trying to arrange for those things to happen. And I'm not going into any specifics, but we've had a few instances of that in the past. So so any help or suggestions anyone has about these 30, we don't need to lobby for any particular ones. We need to identify reviewers and let the reviewers sort out their rank orders, and then we can discuss them from there and try to pick out the best ones. All right. Any NIAAA comments on this process?
None that we haven't already thrown out there. Bill may have one.
Yeah, I did have. So, Ed, how many of the 35 do you think will be asked to submit 5-page follow-up applications?
I would like to keep it under 10. And, you know, I don't mind asking people to write a one-pager, and I really did mean a one-pager when I was conceiving this. You know, if the odds of getting funded are 3%, but I don't want people to waste a lot of time unless they have a 20 to 30% chance of getting funded. So I'd like to bring it down. If we could fund 3 of these things to basically have it, you know, around 10.
Okay.
So that you put the effort in, there's a 30% chance that your project's going to be picked.
Mm-hmm.
I think people like those odds. I think they get a little bit more hesitant when their odds are 5 or 10%, you know, to invest that effort. So I'd like to knock down this list to 35 to maybe 10 to 12.
So, Ed, just to be clear, you're wanting us to recommend reviewers of these one-page letters, but then will you also ask them to re-review the, you know, the finalists for the funding at a later date? And what would that date be at this point?
No, we're not going to ask them to come back in to review the final ones unless we need them. That we're going to try to handle within the SAB, and the PIs working within the consortium, because I think in this case, fitting into the consortium is a major criteria, and who best knows that but the people who deal with what's going on in the project. So I think if we need outside help to understand the science, then we'll get that. But I'd like to leave that final decision to NIAAA, the SAB, with input from all the PIs.
Okay.
Does Does that make sense?
And again, just the timetable, looking ahead to when we think that we'll be doing the review of the final application.
Well, hopefully we'll
Put it up on WebEx.
Okay.
It's been emailed out previously, so.
Yeah,
I think we're talking in March, right? So, all right, that's that. Now,
so would we be doing a discussion and final selection as part of the annual meeting?
It's a possibility that if we have everything done there, we could probably try to include that in, but I'm not going to right now.
Okay. Well, if it worked out, it seemed like it might make a lot of sense, but okay.
Yeah, I mean, we might be able to discuss them there, but our meetings get typically pretty hectic as they are, and this time we're going to have a few people not there that I would have preferred to have been there, but it's not happening. And, you know, I want to encourage everybody that this progress report will be probably one of the last ones due before we need to start thinking about the renewal and which projects should move forward in the renewal and which projects really need to step out and be independent ROIs. There's no guarantee that projects that are currently in this consortium will move on, and we need to talk about leadership roles and who's going to take charge of various things. And that, I think, will have a major role in that March meeting, is to try to see where the next direction of CFAS is going. I think there are some new exciting areas that have been opened up and may want to place more resources on them. There are projects that we haven't covered in terms of interventions that we may want to try to promote. So I think we need to think about, does CFAS continue to do more of the same, or does it try to branch out and I think do what its intent was to do state-of-the-art type of science and move the field forward in more than just the small incremental types of things. And I think we've done a reasonably good job of that recently. I've been extremely impressed with this integration type of work that Michael's doing and getting the other projects involved in and where we can go from there.
Well, I guess my suggestion would be is that should be the highest priorities in terms of allocating time for the annual meeting, and that, and along with that, the pilot projects, if we're sort of taking a strategic look at where CFAS is going, and perhaps if the part of the meeting that's set aside for, you know, progress report updates from the current investigators, that we try to keep that limited to the point that we have adequate time for the broader discussion of these other strategic issues.
That has always been our goal. We have really not always met that goal, but we try to get these progress reports out ahead of time so that people
right.
can basically, everyone already knows what you've done,
right. mm-hmm.
and then we can discuss where the high payoff routes to progress are, either within a project or maybe the project has kind of run its course. And there's enough data already collected in a particular area that continuing it doesn't make a lot of sense. Analyzing and getting the data out and getting the data available for everybody else may make more sense. And that brings up, I think that I'm looking at the Google Docs now. There are some projects that have made substantial progress where I think everything is basically on target. A couple things are a little below their target levels. I am not always sure, however, that all of this data is in the central repository, because the Google Docs that I get all show progress and things are going up, but when I get the amount of data in the central repository, they don't always show those nice increases. So I'm not sure why that is, but, you know, we need to, you know, it's not data unless it's in that repository. And so we have to get people in there, and if they're having difficulty with doing that, we need to know why.
And hey, Ed, this is Sarah. Could you be a little more specific? Like, namely,
no.
I want to know if you're talking about the neurobehavioral project.
I wasn't talking about any specific project. I was just talking about I'm looking at between July 31st and 2004. No, I'm sorry, and November 30th, 2014. So, you know, a four-month period. And just looking at the change, and so in that period we basically have 150 kids who have had dysmorphology exams, but not a lot of changes in, let's see, we think we lost subjects in the neurobehavioral.
Well, what are you?
No, we gained subjects.
In terms of what's in the central repository for neurobehavior, I can only talk about that. What's in the Google Doc comes directly from the central repository, so I'm wondering why there would be a difference.
Well, I just will give one example that in. Let's see. Without naming the thing, they're basically the same number of data points in the July 31st as there are in the November 30th for a major component. So I'm not going to embarrass anybody or say anything,
okay.
But I just want to be sure that people, if they're collecting data, are getting that data into the repository so in a way that can be useful. We're going to have some issues with our collaborations that have been proposed with NeuroDevNet, where we have to get this stuff available and uploaded. And I don't want to make data available to NeuroDevNet that's not available to everybody. So, you know, or within our consortium anyway, if that's making any sense. It's difficult without getting into specifics.
Okay.
So.
Understood.
Ed, so in the last five-year segment, I recall we kind of eased into these charts and at some point transitioned them into reflecting what was in the database that had been uploaded. And I wonder if, are we in a position to turn this charting system into one that's really charting what's in the central repository based on the experience from the last segment?
Yeah, and I think for the most part it does. And again, for the most part, you know, there are certain things, you know, the camera only goes to a site every so often.
Understand.
So if there's a lag in that site for a couple of months because the 3D camera hasn't been there, that's certainly understandable. And then you would expect that when the camera goes there, there'll be a jump. And so if you look at the Google Docs, it looks pretty good. I mean, everything is up online and they are at their projected things for the most part. Some are a little slower, but they're getting there. And, you know, Jeff added a bunch of data, so things are going. But I just want to make sure that it's in the repository that people can get access to it. I don't want to be embarrassed when we get these requests for data and we say that we have dysmorphology exams or we have brain imaging data on, you know, so many people, and then you find out it's not there. So.
This is Jill. Sorry. I thought when we created the Google Docs this time, we were going to make it so that they were just for, you were only supposed to enter in data if it had been entered into the central repository, too, to avoid having the two-graph system like we had at the end of last time. Am I wrong?
And that may be the case, but without, again, I don't want to get into any specifics. I'll take it up with specific individuals. But I am looking at a let's see here, an increasing line that is not reflected on the data that I get from Michelle. All right, so that there's a discrepancy somewhere, and I just want to clarify that. That's all. All right, I didn't mean to make a big deal out of this. All right, so I'm going to move on. My prerogative. And ask if anyone has any great new data they would like to share. As I said, you know, Hannah Kitty had a nice paper come out this week on SIDS and some genetic factors, I believe. Anything from informatics core that we need to know? This morphology core is not on. Kathy and Scott?
Not much new. We've been busy grant writing for a collaboration between UNC and NCCU, which is kind of fun because it's helping us get our ducks in a row for thinking about what new things we might want to do for the consortium, too.
All right. Elizabeth's on a plane. Someone's on for Elizabeth, though, I'm assuming. Yes? No?
You know, if we have a minute, I wouldn't mind putting up a slide and asking for some feedback.
Oh, that'd be great.
Okay. I'm going to ask Jeff Wozniak. You get your slide ready. Jeff, anything new and exciting?
Nothing specifically. We're still working on the resting state analyses, having a few challenges with that. But I've been talking to Elizabeth about things that we're doing and things that she's doing. So it's in progress. And Deepak is not on the call, but we've also been helping him with his development project. So he is getting samples from us, and he's been running various analyses on things. And so that's moving ahead.
Yeah, he's told me about that, and I appreciate that. So,
yeah.
And Sarah, are you?
I have my slide up, but I'm not sure how to.
Sorry, I need to get my. Sorry, Sarah.
Okay, Peter, you've been working really hard. You've been, although that file that you sent, I can't really execute it.
I've had trouble too.
Have you?
So, yeah, I don't know what's going on, but it doesn't want to execute. I can see the individual pictures, but they don't do anything.
Okay. Well, we'll look into that.
All right. And Deepak's not on. Johart's. Ben Lovely, are you on? Ben's a postdoc with Johan. Tom, how's the work at NOFAST going?
All is well. We're now formulating plans for presentations, trainings, and meetings next year that we'll be obviously talking about CFAST data and results, and also have some plans in the works for some new videos and website enhancements.
Yeah. So, how has that series gone? I mean, I know that you get a reasonably good turnout for the live WebEx, but are they people looking at them after that?
Been terrific, terrific response, terrific feedback to the webinar series. We're actually getting about 3 to 4 times the viewership after the live presentation. So that's one of the website enhancements we're working on, which is to have them all available, not just on our website, which they are actually available from the website now, but to have them on the NOFAST alcohol-free pregnancy YouTube site, and not just post them, but also market those so we can really drive even more traffic to them.
Okay. I mean, I think they've gone very well. So I'm pleased that we got involved in this, and I look forward to continuing thing. I know Kathy's out doing a training today in Baltimore and hopefully telling people a little bit more about CFAST.
Indeed.
All right, Sarah, I see your graph.
Okay, I know we're coming close to the time, but just this is something that we have been working on. It's part of the abstract that went into Michael's symposium, and
bigger.
I just bigger.
Please maximize.
Or just
really big on my small. How's that? Is it bigger?
Do presentation mode? Is it a?
Yeah. Okay, now what do you? I don't know what you see.
Now we see I have panels.
Now we see littler ones.
Okay, you only
two
need to
them.
See the. Yeah, because when I share my screen, it shares the wrong screen.
All right, so I just maximized it on my screen.
Okay.
Now if you go back to the other mode where I don't see
Oh, wait, I know.
Slides,
hold on. How about that?
That's
better.
Ah, okay. All right, so really briefly, and I'm open to feedback. This is something that's definitely a work in progress. So our aim one is to create a hierarchical sort of stepwise approach to better identify children who are affected by alcohol. So it's not children exposed necessarily, but children affected. And I sort of come at this from, it's very foreign to me because there's no, at this point, real statistics. It's kind of, we're making these stepwise decisions. We're plugging in the best variables. And we're using CFAS-2 data. And then the next step will be to apply it to CFAS-3 data to verify the model or to validate the model. Ken Jones and I have been working on this together. It works with dysmorphology and neurobehavioral data. We're trying to come up with a very simple set of measures. Remember the four-question approach. You know, come up with the smallest number of variables that we can use that a clinician can say this child should be evaluated further. So when we started with dysmorphology variables. Can you see my cursor? So the very first step is to take the kids with FAS and take them out of the pool because dysmorphologist identifies them as FAS, so they are already identified. Then the kids who don't have FAS, we look at their dysmorphology. If they have more than one of the or one or more of the physical features, then they go down this. So I'm giving you sort of a generic pathway now. They go down this yes path. If they don't, they go down. Well, it's supposed to be no. They go down this path. And then what we do is we come up at the end, and then we go through behavior, and we come up at the end with children who are correctly identified and children who are not correctly identified. One of the things that Ken brought up early on was, why are we starting with dysmorphology, which is kind of funny, I thought, and so why not start with behavior? So we backed up, and we now have two routes of entry into the model. One is up here through the psychologist. One is over here through the dysmorphologist. Our goal is to make it so that this dysmorphology model can sort of be pulled out and stand alone. And then so children can come in through the psychologist route or through the dysmorphology route. Right now we have an 80% overall accuracy. This includes all children with alcohol exposure. They might be in the contrast group. They might be a control. They might be an alcohol-exposed kid. Obviously, these are kids for whom we know
But they're not FAS, and
we're not including the FAS kids.
Okay.
So these are kids who, but ultimately, we'll probably include those in our success because we identified them, right? They're not here yet.
Yeah.
So just really, I'm looking for feedback, sort of general feedback on. Does this make sense to you? We're using a very small number of variables. You can either come in through the psychologist and you need a CBCL, an IQ score.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Or you
can come in through the dysmorphology and you need a few more measures.
Yeah. No, I think it's a reasonable approach. The one concern I have is that if you come in through the behavioral route or perhaps even the physical route,
yeah,
is that the main test is the CBCL. And I worry about the bias of the CBCL
mm-hmm.
in a foster or adoptive parent
mm-hmm.
who thinks their child has FASD
mm-hmm.
and already knows what to put. because
that's possible.
That's the, you know, that there's no validation, no cognitive or behavioral validation of that CBCL.
Mm-hmm. Cognitive or behavioral validation of the CBCL. We have lots of different models, and we do have other cognitive variables. They don't happen to be in this particular one that you're seeing, but when we looked at the variables that best discriminated the groups, we actually used statistics there. The CBCL was a really good measure. We do know, however, that parents of children with prenatal alcohol exposure report things differently than parents, for example, of children with ADHD.
And we also know parents' reports differ from laboratory assessments of similar types of behavior.
On some measures, not on all measures.
On some measures. So,
like for attention, for example, we know that their measures of attention are valid, but hyperactivity, they don't appear to be valid.
Sarah, is the order of these something that you are selecting based on a hypothesis, and you're looking then whether or not that produces a high predictive value, or are you doing this in a more random and automated way? And if you're not, maybe it would be helpful to do that.
I would say, something in between. I mean, we have variables in our set of data set that we think are important in terms of identifying kids with alcohol exposure. So from that perspective, it's hypothesis driven. But what we did was it's not random and automated. We took the best variables at that decision point and we plugged them in. And then at the next decision point, we looked again to see what variables were best at that decision point, and so on.
Because I just wonder if you have a few that you would start with based on hypothesis, whether you couldn't automate the rest of this and just run them against a criterion so that the computer could sort of whip through it all and just tell you, you know, if you start with A, then the combination of X, Y, and Z following is alone sufficient to give you 80% predictive value. I don't know how hard it would be to set that up. But it would take you out of the realm of the things that you believe would work and might allow you to discover something. So in a way, I'm arguing for a discovery-based rather than a hypothesis-based approach.
Right.
To see what comes out of it, since you have all the data in there.
Yeah, I would say that our approach is discovery-based because we're looking at the variables at every choice point. We're not bound by a preconceived idea, although that said, the only variables we have are variables that we thought were going to, in our whole CFAS neurobehavioral assessment, are ones that we thought were going to be good variables.
All right, so like if you take these 74% accuracy for the in part two, and then you take those kids that you accurately identified, and you just went back and started looking at objective measures that didn't go into this original thing.
So accurate versus inaccurate, or accurate alcohol versus not alcohol?
I'd have to think about that.
Probably alcohol versus not alcohol. Okay.
That if you then take those subjects that you're saying these are alcohol exposed, we could successfully identify these kids. Now, can we go back and use some of these behavioral criteria that did not go into the mix and identify them? I mean, they were originally identified on the basis of that mix, though.
Yeah.
I don't know. I have to think about it. But
yeah, I mean, another goal. Go ahead.
From an epidemiological point of view, is a 73% accuracy rate good? On a two-choice thing?
I think it's good. I mean, we have had better, but we've also, you know, in different permutations had a lot worse. But I think, you know, it gets back to how many kids who are exposed are actually affected. And we probably have a biased sample. You know, we're getting kids, for the most part, who are more likely to be affected.
but chance is 50%.
Yeah, well, it's definitely significant. I mean, it's significantly different from chance. I mean,
right.
So there's that, but you're asking about clinical significance.
Yeah, I mean, is it useful?
Yeah, we'd like
enough?
It to be 99.
Well, you're not Susan Astley, so don't.
Hey, look down here, though. We got 100% with these three kids right here.
Don't go there.
I'm just kidding.
So, all right, well, it looks like it's, you know, I think there's a lot of need for validation of this. And, again,
well, that's what will be done in CFAS 3.
And I worry about the CBCL and how that would work with a population that didn't know they were being assessed for FASD.
So, Sarah, this is John. I wanted to go back to a point that I think Michael was raising about, you know, I understand, you know, the discovery approach, but you're making the decision that, you know, your first decision point is the one that is the one predictor that comes out to be the best. But I'm wondering if whatever that first choice is with the whole population, you know, whether it's a CBCL or anything else, you know, might be either too general or not selective enough. And if you picked another first choice point that wasn't exactly the best, does it give you a different branching?
Yeah, I see what you're saying. So lower the discriminability at the first step to perhaps increase the discriminability at a later step.
I couldn't tell you what steps you would follow. I'm just thinking of it conceptually. But, you know, and maybe it's, you know, allowing everything to fight against itself in any order at a time. And I don't know how to do stuff like that. But I'm just thinking. Maybe the CBCL is the first one on the best choice. But if you use something else to discriminate everybody first, you know, what comes out? Maybe it's a matter of taking the CBCL out and see what happens next.
Yeah.
It might give you, and then in the end, how does that match up with who you've identified?
Well, we could try the whole thing again and only use direct measures and not use parent questionnaires. I think there's a benefit to using parent questionnaires in that I completely agree with what Ed is saying, but there's also the added benefit of allowing it to be utilized in almost any clinical setting, whereas requiring a specific neuropsychological test
makes it
more limited.
We all agree on
that. So we want a balance. We'd have to make a balance. But I definitely agree with that, you know, in terms of, because we have papers showing the difference between parent report and objective measures. So.
But you have all the data, and so playing with it in various ways, you know, might pop something different out for you.
I think trying it without the CBCL will definitely see what happens. You'll note that the CBCL is actually not in this model, but the Vineland is, and that has the same problem. The CBCL is up here.
So you had two Vinelands. When you hit the Vineland on the dysmorphology side, they were both yes?
No, it's supposed to be no. Sorry.
Oh, okay.
That's
all right.
No.
Okay. But the criteria.
But if they have.
But the threshold looked different.
Yes. If they don't meet the dysmorphology criterion, then.
I have to come off. Sorry about that. Goodbye.
Yeah, I think we're all going to have to get off, too. So.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
If anyone has any additional comments, just send them to me. That'd be great.
All righty. Thank you, everybody.
Thank you.
Dale, Bill, you want to stay on for a second?
Sure.
Bye-bye.
John,
Bye.
You can stay on, too.
Okay. All right. Yeah, I wanted
Dan,
to talk to you.
Dan, are you there? Is Dan hang up ready?
I think so. I'll call.